Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, taking you behind the scenes with the stars and creators of the hottest shows on Broadway and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cotts. On this episode of Stagecraft, I talk to actor Janet McTeer and playwright Teresa Rebeck about Bernhardt Hamlet, the new Broadway play about the actress Sarah Bernhardt and her groundbreaking performance in the title role of Hamlet in 1899. Both McTeer and Rebeck are familiar names to theater fans. McTeer won a Tony for the 1997 revival of A Doll's House and has appeared more recently on Broadway in Mary Stuart and Les Liaisons Dangereuses, and she's back on Broadway now following prominent gigs in new seasons of two Netflix shows, Ozark and Jessica Jones. Meanwhile, Rebeck is a busy writer, both on stage and on screen, with stage credits that include Mauritius, Bad Dates, and Seminar, and screen work that stretches from NYPD Blue to Smash to an upcoming film. I'll be talking with each of them about theater history, theater present, and why a 19th century production of Hamlet has so much resonance today. First up is Janet McTeer. Hi, Janet. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
You are playing Sarah Bernhardt, who was considered at the time, anyway, the greatest actress possibly of all time. How do you, as an actor, think about embodying her and then taking on, because you perform as Sarah in the show, and then taking on sort of her style or technique?
It's a tricky one. I was talking about this just last night. Because you're in a modern play.
Right.
So it's in the modern vernacular. But you're playing someone of a completely different era. So, and she was rehearsing Hamlet, and her style at the time, she was considered to be sort of one of the early heroines of naturalism. But if you see what she was doing, it's not what we would call naturalistic.
Right. And there exist, we should say, there exist, you know, snippets of...
Yeah, exactly.
Early film.
So
and
when you watch that, you go, that isn't truly naturalistic, and yet when you watch it, you can see that she's really in it. She's really, you know. So it's not a declamatory style, but it's certainly more stylized, per se, than we are. So then you have to decide if you're, you know, how much homage you can pay to that, and or how much you're going to try and do it in what we would call naturalism. So it's sort of, we've played a lot with that balance in rehearsals, because I think if I played the Hamlet or the bits of Hamlet that we do in the way that I think she probably would have done it, it's not what we would call naturalism. So somewhere in there, you know, and when you're playing a real person, I think you obviously you read all of, especially a dead one,
right.
You know, you can't actually go and interview. You read it as much as you can, you know, and all the biographies are different. They all have a different take on her. And then there's her autobiography. So all you can do is read all of them, see what they have in common, see where they differ, and read her autobiography and see what she either adds or leaves out. And to me, that was sort of the most telling thing. You know, you can't act charisma. You can just go on stage and do it and hope for the best. And you can't act wanting people to think you're fabulous. You know, you can't. You just have to do it and hope for the best with your whole heart. And so I felt like, you know, again, you kind of meet in the middle when you're playing a real character. Otherwise you're just mimicking, and then you're not really putting your heart and soul into it, and then you're not really in there, you know. And I think you have to be halfway through, they have to forget that Sarah didn't look like you.
Right.
You know, she was very short. She wasn't tall. She was skinny. She was all not so much skinny at this age, but she certainly looked very, very different from me. Nothing I can do about that. You know, you can only kind of try and embody her characteristics or her character, her character traits.
Did you know much about her before starting to work on this play?
Not as much as I do now.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
I did, yes. Somebody had sent me a book several years ago about her playing Hamlet, and so I read that, and I had coincidentally read Robert Gottlieb's book, about her. I read that a couple of times, actually, a few years ago, because he's a friend. And so I did. And, of course, I'm European, so she's more famous in Europe than she is here.
Was there one sort of key discovery in all the reading that you did in terms of, you talked about what sort of chimed and what was sort of left out in all the different
accounts? I think, you know, people always talk about how flamboyant she was and how, you know, she had all these gimmicks and how she had all of these. She was a great star and she sort of invented celebrity and she was invulnerable and all of those kind of things. And I didn't see that at all. I saw someone who lived in a time before Twitter and internet and, you know, podcasts, and
right.
whose only outlet was newspapers, I guess. And magazines, the Lady magazine, perhaps, you know, that's kind of it.
Right.
And so somebody who was clever enough to kind of go, well, I have to use that, so I have to wear fabulous clothes, and I have to do outrageous things, or I have to, you know. So I think, and in her autobiography, she doesn't talk about her past, which was really not nice. You know, she didn't have a loving family. She didn't know who her father was. We can guess, but we don't really know. She talks about him as if he's this kind of angel. So clearly this lack of parental figure, you know, there isn't a kid in the world without two solid parents, or even one solid parent, you know, who doesn't come away scarred from that. You know, you have to have one loving parent, and she didn't have either. And I think that really matters. And so, you know, she had a woman friend who was older than her, who she became friends with in, I want to say, she was in her probably early 20s, and remained her bestest, as it were, until the older lady died and she was heartbroken. And I can, you know, and she had a little inner sanctum of besties, and I think that's very much somebody who's yearning to belong, somebody who's... So all of those kind of things I felt were what I kind of gleaned, but obviously, when I read all the books again, I was reading them to try and act them rather than to look at them from the outside.
Right.
And, yeah.
What you yourself have experience with taking on a Shakespearean role that is a male role. You play Petruchio in Central Park in the Lydia Lloyd's production, all-female production of The Taming of the Shrew. How do you approach something like that, and why is that important to your mind as a thing to take on?
I think what we did with The Taming of the Shrew and what I did in, for example, Albert Nobbs, where I played a woman who lived as a man, they're all, you know, each situation is different. She just wanted to play Hamlet. She believed, you know, that and partly it's what Teresa deals with in the play, that there weren't that many great parts left for women who are grown up women. So she thought, well, I want to, and it's a great part, so why shouldn't I? And she had that very much that natural kind of sod it, let's do it.
Right.
Why not?
Right.
Quand même, you know, which was her motto.
Right.
And I feel not dissimilar to that in that sense, that I have very much a kind of, you know, so what if it's scary? Give it a go.
Right.
What's the worst thing that can happen? You fall flat on your face, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again. So what? Doesn't mean it's not scary. But I feel like, you know, when we were doing the other times I've played either women living as men or an all-female production, I think that was very much about a take on men. It was sort of taking the mickey out of men. It was taking the mickey out of gender. It was, you know, that was a different sort of thing. And then it was modern. So, you know, I was strutting like a modern guy. And, you know, with Sarah, it's sort of different because she played him, you know, it was still classical. So you can't strut around in those kind of, you know, because she wasn't really dressed like a guy, you know.
Right.
So it's sort of, all you can do is try and be a little more male in your gestures. Perhaps she was very, you know.
Yeah.
But again, that's of its time. So it's a tricky one.
And so how then do you feel like this, the story of Sarah Bernhardt taking on this role, which was quite controversial at the time, how does that play today, given the conversation that we're having about women in parody?
Yeah, I think the conversation hasn't changed in that much, in as much as, if I said I'm going to play Hamlet, people would always go, that's wonderful, but why? Why are you doing it?
Right.
And you'd have to have a really good reason.
Right.
Instead of saying, well, because it's a great part and I want to play it, why shouldn't I play it?
Right.
You know, you'd still have to give a good reason.
Right.
You'd have to justify it rather than being able to say, because it's a great part and I want to give it a go.
Right.
And this is theatre, we're not, you know, we're supposed to be able to do anything.
Right, right, yeah. Do you have a take on where women stand in the theater industry these days in terms of, has there been progress?
It's getting better. It's definitely getting better. And I'm not really a negative person. So, of course, you know, I'm doing a play that I want to do,
right.
Which is very much championing and highlighting the fact that, you know, there are, as we all know, there aren't as many great parts for women as there are for men.
Right.
And luckily I'm playing one of them. And so, of course, that's something you feel. Of course it is. I'm a woman in my profession. I think it's getting better, and I think you just have to keep going. You have to keep plugging. You have to go out and keep doing it and refusing to let it get you down. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Just keep creating more opportunities. Keep living it. Keep doing it.
Yeah. How did this play get to you?
They just sent it to me,
yeah.
And they were going to do a reading of it, and they sent it to me, and I had to give it a quick scan. And as soon as I gave it a quick scan, I thought, wait a minute, this is great.
Mm.
So then I read it properly, and it wasn't ready. And that was last year. And then I contacted them and said, please, please do a reading when I'm in town. I'm in
right.
down on these dates.
Right.
And then we did the first reading, and I knew it was something that I had to give it a go. We all had to. And I love Teresa, and I love Moritz.
Right.
And so...
That's Teresa Rebeck and Moritz.
Yes.
Did you say his last name? Stultnagel,
yes.
Oh, great.
So
okay.
I really wanted to work with them, and then it all came together.
Right.
Yeah.
And where would you have been... What TV show would you have been working on at that time? Would that have been Jessica? Would you have been in town for Jessica Jones, maybe? Or?
No, I was working on Ozark at the time.
Oh, Ozark, sure.
And then I was also working on a TV series called Sorry for Your Loss, which hasn't come out
yet.
Yeah,
that has not come out yet, right?
No. Yeah. So I was flitting between the two, but for some reason I was in town. It was like I had a week off from filming, and so I, you know.
Right. Speaking of those two TV roles... Well, the ones we have seen, Jessica Jones. This is you played major characters in both the second season of Jessica Jones and then more recently released second season of Ozark.
Mm-hmm.
And it's safe to say that they are antagonists. They're not exactly villains, but they're antagonists, right?
Yeah, is correct.
That seems like a fun role to inhabit in a story. Is that?
Oh yeah.
Is that fun for you?
Oh yeah, it's really good fun. Yeah, it's great fun. They were both great, great fun in completely different ways. And of course, Jason I met on Ozark.
Oh, right. Yeah, this is Jason Butler-Harner, who plays
Edna Rostand.
Yeah. Who is, in this play, Sarah's lover, Edmund Rostand? Is that, how based in fact is that?
Nobody knows.
That's the impression I get.
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
They were great, great friends.
Right.
He remained one of her great friends. His wife actually became one of her good friends.
Mm.
And he was one of the few people who was allowed to...
That's interesting. There's a moment in that play that sort of suggests that they could be friends, right?
Yeah. And there's a... he was one of the very few who were allowed to come and visit her while she was dying. And, you know, so they were... So, I mean, who knows? But the truth is, she slept with many, many people. She had many lovers. So the chance of her not sleeping together, you know. But since we don't know, and for the purposes of the play, it's also about... Yeah.
Right. Did the role of Sarah remind you of any other roles that you've played?
No.
Interesting. Why not?
Because she's I suppose the level of fun I have with her in a very kind of spontaneous way, she's probably the quickest. I felt that she should be really quick, that she drives the play, so she's really fast. And just, you know, I personally have a huge sense of humor and a great love of life, and I'm a very happy person. And I feel that this is probably the chance that I've had the most of showing that, because I am very strong and I am very tall. So I often get, you know, the scary ones.
Yeah, right.
right. And the scary, you know, and the scary powerful ones. And she was powerful, but she was also, you know, big and loving and warm and all of those kind of things as well, I think. And so, yeah.
Given all the screen work you're doing, what... keeps you coming back to theater?
Theater's my first love. It always will be my first love. I've always tried to go from one to the other, theater and film and TV, just because they're different disciplines and they're great fun. And theater is harder than by a long chalk. It just is. I don't live in New York, so it keeps me away from my family. So I don't do it as often as I would if I wasn't trying to rush home to my family and, you know, all of those kind of things. But it's still, I don't know. It's like being a natural runner or being a natural basketball player or something. I just feel like stage feels like a home to me, you know. And I love doing film and I love doing television. I love it. I love the community of it all. I love it. Always feels... I don't like popping in and doing things. People do like that, but I don't. I like to feel like I know everybody and like I'm part of a team.
And what's next for you after this, do you know?
Crikey, I don't know. I gotta have a rest.
Yeah.
Go home and make bread.
Great.
And eat lots of carbs. Because I'm wearing very tight black pants.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna eat cake for a week.
That sounds great. And we'll see you back on stage when you get here.
Exactly, yeah.
Thanks a lot, Janet. Thanks for being
here. Thank you so much.
Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
That was Janet McTeer, the star of Bernhard Hamlet. Let's turn now to the writer of the play, Teresa Riebeck. Hi, Teresa. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So when did the idea come to you for Bernhard Hamlet? And why did you think this piece of theater history would make a good play in and of itself?
I carried it around with me for so long, like about 10 years, that I can't actually remember the inception moment all that one. Well, there was a moment I'd been thinking about it. And then one year, my husband and I went to Prague on holiday and we went to the Mucha Museum. I've always been fascinated by Alphonse Mucha. And I got to see all those glorious posters that he did of her, you know, in the original. And I had thought that it had already been in the soup. And then I thought, she did a Hamlet. I really need to write that play. And then I carried it around with me and carried it around with me. And a friend of mine finally said, aren't you going to write that? And I was a little shamed into it. But it was the right thing to do, yeah.
And so how much did you know about the history and how did you research what was...
Well, by that point, I knew a lot about the history because I had been... The thing that I began with was the astonishing images of her that are out there and her costumes and those posters and her jewelry. I mean, she was someone who was very present in the culture as a physical being. And a lot of, you know, this was her life was up until the very end before film. And so I was looking at a lot of images of her. And then I read a lot of books about her. The books are contradictory and incomplete. She was such a controversial and fascinating figure that, and she was apparently a, you know, pathological liar. And at times she slept with everyone. So a lot of what you read from, she wrote a lot. She's quite brilliant. You know, I read her the stuff that she had written and books written about her and letters, you know, it was all kind of in there. And, and then so this started to emerge. There's a new book about her that I haven't read yet that everyone tells me is very good. That's about her and Dusa.
And Dusa, yeah, that's true. That just came out. And so then, of course, part and parcel of this idea is that then you have to cast an actress to play the woman who was considered the greatest actress of her time at the moment. What were you looking for in the actress? What were you looking to sort of highlight about Sarah that you were looking for in the actress to play her?
She was somebody who had to be just great and incandescent. And when we did the first reading of it, Moritz and I were looking at the list, and Janet's name was on the list. And I literally said, let's send it to Janet McTeer and see what happens. I mean, there was sort of like no discussion. You just went, well, who else would you go to?
Yeah.
And and so luckily she was taken with it. And she's just been an insane delight to work with. She's mercurial, and so it all just comes out of her. And you think that and that charisma and that passion and that like passion for life, it's in Sarah's character. So it was really great when she showed up and did the first reading. That was amazing.
Yeah. Are theater people fun to write about?
You know, they are. They are also my world. You know, I sometimes get a little like, maybe I should be writing about something else. But then I think, you know, Chekhov spent a lot of time writing about theater people. They really do carry their own universe with them. And what I feel so moved by actors and the way they lift their humanity into eternity. And that's powerful for me. But, you know, and then it also often is coupled with crippling narcissism, and you know what I mean. They're kind of like way fun to write about because, like, why wouldn't you want to write about that?
Yeah. Do you ever have to think about, you know, particularly with this play? Did you ever think, oh, what if this is too inside theatery? Do I need to sort of scale back the specificity of the references or anything, or is that not a concern?
It wasn't a concern. I really did just hit. I had the idea I should write a play about Sarah Bernhardt doing Hamlet. And it was a long time ago. And over time, while I thought about how would you actually do that, there were a lot of questions like, where do you pick up the story? And it did not feel like it wanted to be a traditional biopic. But and then I became really interested in, I went and looked at like Amadeus as a, you know, and a couple of other historical dramas that I really admire. But, you know, and it felt like there's a grand tradition of looking at artists and their lives that is very of powerful interest to all of us, you know, the history of culture. And this felt like one of those stories.
It also feels like, I would imagine that as you got closer and closer to production, that the subject and the action of the play sort of started to take on surprisingly timely themes or additional timely themes. It just seems like speaking about this very powerful woman who is doing a thing that is more, you know, that is controversial and, you know, right, filling a role that is traditionally filled by a male. Like, did you start to think about that as you were writing and rewriting?
Well, you know, she is who she is and she did what she did it. Yeah. And I, one of the things that I was more concerned about, I talked to a lot of actors I knew who had played Hamlet, and I needed to ask them, what are the traps? Where does your head start to fail you? Where does your instrument, you know, where are the impossible, what's it like to take on Hamlet? And that was enormously valuable to me, because I felt like the thing had to have that muscle of terror about taking on that part. And then the history of women taking on Hamlet really begins with Sarah Bernhardt. And it's still, you know, at this moment in time, cross-dressing and gender fluidity and all those things are kind of in discussion in the culture in a very different way. But I think I felt, as I really just stood in her story, that this was a moment where those questions started to rise, and that it was vital to all of us to look at the kind of beginning of the questions. I think we skip over it sometimes.
Have you walked away from working on this play? Or I guess you haven't walked away quite yet, but have there been any surprising insights into that as you've been during the process?
Well, of course. There, you know, yes. Yes. Do you want to know what they are?
Yeah, please.
Surprising insights. One of the things that I started thinking about was this idea of the muse. You know, I needed there to be a really essential debate about the self and Hamlet. And, you know, Sarah and Edmund Rostand, the playwright, were so deeply entwined in each other's lives, and it was clear that they were functioning as each other's muses. That was something that was powerfully apparent in all the reading that I did. And I thought, there's this brilliant, really brilliant book by Francine Prose about the lives of the muses that I went back and looked at, and I showed it to the director and to Janet. And, you know, the way that relationship centers on how powerfully artists can identify with each other, how the boundaries of the self are blurred in those relationships. And yet, it was at a time when, you know, what she was doing, what Sarah was doing, was so smashing gender norms, and that finally appeared within that relationship, which was so essentially powerful. You know, at one point I thought, I think I might be a little bit writing about Kathy and Heathcliff in that crazy moment in Wuthering Heights where they can't differentiate from each other. I feel like there were insights that emerged out of that are deep truths around whether men and women can see, well, I think it's mostly women sense this from men, that you don't see us as your partners on this earth. And that has to change, you know, that really deeply has to change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You've done a lot of writing for screen as well, particularly in TV. Has working in TV and film, has that affected the way you write for theater in any way?
Well, I think, yeah, probably. It seems inevitable. I think what it has done is it's moved me into a much more muscular kind of galloping forward motion. This play was kind of great to write because there were so many interesting arguments, and it was at a time when people, that's partly what they did, is they sat around and argued with each other because no one was going home and watching television. They would go out and have a coffee and discuss things and or go to each other's house, like long dinner parties where they chat. And so it was sort of great to be able to settle into this scene, these three things happen, but mostly they sit around to talk to each other. You know, like a Shaw play, except with some sex. I do think it's one of the things I actually now try to, when I teach, it's something that is important to me to teach to students is the idea of forward motion, which it really does begin in the theater where you look at, you know, action rises out of character, story rises out of action. And it's always been my aesthetic. I believe that great plays are written out of that formula. I'm not somebody who needs to, I believe like, you know, Beckett wrote plays in which that's truth. I just believe great plays are written out of that. And certainly great television is written out of that. I think that right now I think TV is leaning too hard on that and it needs to slow down. I really like one of my favorite shows right now is Better Call Saul because a lot happens and a lot doesn't happen. And you're just like watching the characters live. Yeah. And that's important to me.
You wrote and directed a film that's coming out soon. It's called
Yes.
Trouble, and Angelica Houston and Bill Pullman are in it. Tell us a bit about it. And do you want to do more directing? Do you enjoy it?
Yeah, I also have been directing in the theater.
Yeah.
And it's a good space for me. I have in the spring I'm going to be directing Crimes of the Heart at the Alley Theater in Houston, and then right after that I'm directing a new play by Rob Ackerman about a documentary, the great documentarian Errol Morris, when he made a commercial about dropping gumballs on Luke Wilson's head. And so this is about this. I think it's one of the most amazing things I've ever read. And I'm excited to be asked to direct the world premiere of that. That's happening in the spring.
And where's that?
At the Working Theater.
Okay, yeah.
And I also, you know, I did Trouble and I think it's a beautiful movie. I love the actors a lot. The performances are amazing. And it's like a little gem of a movie in a way. It's sort of like one of those Irish movies about small town, except it's in Vermont, you know, so it's a little like Waking Ned Divine, except it's in Vermont. And it's really about these two very mighty people in a small town whose lives were destroyed around their father's death years ago. And how are, you know, is the world ever going to be whole for them again? So
with all the screen work that you're doing, what keeps you coming back to the theater and writing as much as you do for the theater?
Well, the theater is so beautiful. And I do think that there's something essential about my identity that is just at play in the theater. And, you know, that when I was very, very, very young, I had this crazy idea of being a playwright. And because I was raised, you know, in Cincinnati, Ohio, and three times a year they would take you down to Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park to see the student matinee. And I would see plays by, Tennessee Williams and Arthur Miller and Moliere and Shakespeare. And it seemed like the mightiest thing that anyone could do with their lives. And I never got over that. So.
What's the next play you're going to work on? Start writing.
Oh, I have to write. I'm working on a play about witches. for, right, I know, it's inevitable that I would have to write a play about, which is for arena stage. So that's what I'm doing.
We can't wait to see it. Thanks, Teresa. Thanks for talking to me.
Thank you.
That was Teresa Rebeck, the writer of Bernhardt Hamlet, now playing in a Roundabout Theater Company production at Broadway's American Airlines Theater. If you like what you've heard on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes and subscribe wherever finer podcasts are dispensed. On the next episode of Stagecraft in 2 weeks, I talk to the writer Connor McPherson, whose latest, The Girl from the North Country, is a play with music, specifically the music of Bob Dylan. Until then, see you at the theater.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.